This is an ABC podcast.
This is ABC Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
And to have local services read by local people with local newspapers is a critical, important thing for that, for those people to stay connected with their community.
Vision Australia has been reading newspapers on air for the blind and vision impaired for around 40 years, but there are now concerns it may be forced to shut down due to a funding shortage. And military training exercises off the Queensland coast.
It's a long job. We get up early, we start the day, we go out and we fly 100 sorties a day, we do it safely day in and day out. I enjoy it. I get to see a lot of the world.
We explore life on one of the world's biggest aircraft carriers parked in the Coral Sea. I'm Alex Hyman and this is Australia Wide. But firstly tonight we head to the Northern Territory to look at payday lenders. Corporate regulator ASIC have been given new powers to crack down on payday lenders that are likely to cause significant consumer detriment. They've identified a model that's currently in use around the country that can rack up to nearly 1,000% debt on the original loan. That's like paying around $1,000 for an initial $100 loan. One of the groups identified as using this model is Signo Loans. Oliver Gordon found some Signo customers in Alice Springs, and he decided to talk to them about their experience.
It was 4 days before Christmas when Sharon Ellis first heard from Signo. The payday loan company messaged her, offering her a quick, small loan.
I decided to get a loan to spend money for my family's for Christmas dinner. So I did apply for that loan. It was $175 loan.
At the time, Sharon was on the New Start allowance, and the money would help her feed the extra family members that would spend the holiday season with her that year.
Because I need a little bit of money to support my families.
Christmas lunch was good, but what Ms. Ellis didn't know was that the loan that helped pay for their celebrations was aggressively accruing fees and charges. Within 1 week, the amount owing had almost doubled to $336.95. A week after that, it was up to $421. It was 3.5 weeks after the loan was granted that Ms. Ellis made her first repayment on the loan. By that time, her balance with Signo was $427.85.
Yes, I was in a shock. So I decided not to get a loan from anywhere anymore because I don't feel safe.
Ms. Ellis's story is just one of many that is being shared about Signo Loans and its associated company, Gold Silver Standard Finance Pty Limited, in recent months. ASIC recently named the companies as using a short-term lending model, which it believes may be causing significant consumer detriment. The corporate watchdog is spending this month collecting case studies like Ms. Ellis's.
So we've asked members of the public, and in fact anybody who's interested in this particular issue, to come and approach us by the end of this month, by the 30th of July, if they possibly can, to provide us with their stories, tell us what their experiences have been, and we're going to build together essentially a casebook of all of this information.
As it stands, the lending model that Sharon signed up for is totally legal. By splitting its brokering arm from its lending arm, the business can use a loophole to charge fees far beyond what is normally allowed of a payday lender.
These numbers are very concerning to us, and they do highlight the need for us to take action and to take action quickly.
And soon they might be able to. New powers granted to the body in the wake of the Royal Commission mean that they may be able to ban the model Signo is using to lend out money.
We think that there may be an opportunity for us to intervene and prevent any harm to consumers.
This is welcome news to Anna Bedford, a Sydney mother of two who also found herself embroiled in a battle with Signo. She's one of the many online reviewers that have given the company a one-star review. She says when Signo incorrectly took over $500 out of her account, she got on the phone.
I tried to call them. It was an hour and 40 minutes on wait, on hold. I didn't even speak to anybody and I ended up hanging up.
Eventually, she got hold of the group and they processed her refund. But in the time when her money was gone, things were tight.
I was near tears. I was almost crying because I needed that money because I have children. I have two children. I needed to get that money for the week to live. because it took them a whole entire week to actually pay that back, we were pretty much living on noodles.
Anna says she's used other short-term lenders, but Signo were different. Her words of advice?
Don't borrow from them ever. Seriously, do not do it. You know, you'll be in more debt than you would ever know.
The ABC's Oliver Gordon there speaking with Signo customers in Alice Springs. Signo has been named by ASIC as one of the groups using a short-term lending model that may be causing significant consumer detriment. The corporate watchdog is gathering stories like Ms. Alice's to investigate whether it could impose a ban.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
And you're with Alex Hyman. There are fears a vital radio service which delivers national and local news to listeners with a vision impairment may be at risk of closing. For around 40 years, Vision Australia has been reading newspapers on air for those who have a print disability, including the blind and vision impaired. The service operates 10 radio stations, three in capital cities and in the regional Victorian towns of Shepparton, Albury-Wodonga, Bendigo, Geelong, Mildura, Warragul and Warrnambool. But the organisation says the rollout of the NDIS has led to a funding shortage and it's now concerned it may be forced to shut down if new methods of funding can't be secured. Michaela Ortolan met with Vision Australia volunteers to talk about how important the service is to its listeners.
Vision Australia Radio is on the airways every day, bringing local and national news in 10 locations across the country. The programs aired in Melbourne, Perth and Adelaide, as well as seven regional towns in Victoria. Peter Simpson is a volunteer at Vision Australia. He's been involved since its beginning in the early 80s and more recently presents the news on air in Shepparton.
A lot of vision impaired, blind, have vision disabilities, people who are dyslexic, people who have full sight but they still struggle to read, and also we've got a large population in Shepparton who come from different countries, different backgrounds, and they just find that it's easier to listen to the newspapers being read to them rather than struggle over trying to read every word themselves.
It's a service that over 700,000 people tune into every month. One of those people is Stephen Jolly, a Melbourne man who was born blind and relies on the radio to stay connected.
From when I was a child, the radio was always very important. It was through the radio that I got introduced to cricket and football and other sport.
For Stephen and many others who are blind or vision impaired, radio is the main link to the wider community, whether it's for news or for entertainment. Without it, many people would feel a sense of isolation. And it's a very real possibility if Vision Australia's radio service closes down.
In the past, Vision Australia's had lots of different sources for funding across different states, and we've been able to cross-subsidise the funding that we've had to be able to support these important services like the radio.
That's Chris Edwards. He's the manager of Government Relations and Advocacy for Vision Australia. Chris says prior to the NDIS rollout, the organisation secured block funding to subsidise the radio service. But that's no longer an option. The NDIS doesn't directly fund organisations, but instead funds are allocated to a person living with a disability to spend on services of their choice. Chris says the organisation needs to secure $700,000 annually from the federal government to continue operating the service. Without that sort of commitment, the radio could be off the airways as soon as Christmas.
The problem is that people are blind in low vision don't have the ability to be able to read the paper independently, so they rely on radio services. Mm-hmm. And to have local services read by local people with local newspapers is a critical, important thing for those people to stay connected with their community, to understand what's happening with their community, and to be able to talk to their friends and about the events of the day.
Vision Australia has been lobbying local members to bring their concerns to Parliament. They're hopeful to have a meeting with the appropriate ministers sometime this month.
Radio is vital. It's not just something nice, it's essential. And if they were to lose radio services, that really would be disastrous.
Stephen Jolly finishing that report from Michaela Ortolan. If you'd like to learn more about this story, you can head to the ABC News website.
This is ABC Australia Wide.
Somewhere in the Coral Sea, the United States Navy warship, the USS Ronald Reagan, is abuzz with activity. 5,000 sailors and air wing personnel are carrying out their duties on the final day of their current mission, the exercise Talisman Sabre. Megan Hendry was lucky enough to be invited on board the Reagan to see firsthand what goes on one of the world's largest nuclear-powered aircraft carriers.
350 nautical miles off the coast of Queensland, the USS Ronald Reagan is cruising at a speed of about 10 knots. It doesn't anchor, but instead it tracks a constant path, usually large rectangles. It ensures a constant headwind, necessary for the dozens of flights that take off and land on the ship's flight deck each day. The next flight to land is the one I'm on, a C2 Greyhound. US Navy pilot Lieutenant Commander Andrew Dunn has performed thousands of arrested landings, having piloted the same plane for the last 11 years. Earlier this month, he delivered Prime Minister Scott Morrison safely on board. But today, we're packed in with some mail and a bunch of flowers.
We're going to make an approach at about 110 knots straight in landing today. Normally, we would come in at about 250 knots, about 500 kph, and we would make a sharp left turn, 60 degrees angle bank, and pull 3 Gs as we decelerate the aircraft.
We go from almost 200 kilometres per hour to a standstill in 2 seconds. The cargo ramp lowers and we're met by the highly trained flight deck crew of the USS Ronald Reagan. Their average age is 19. Some of them don't even have a driver's licence. Once inside, we meet the man in charge, Commander of Battle Force 7th Fleet, Rear Admiral Carl Thomas. He's served 33 years in the US Navy, but this is his first exercise Talisman Sabre.
What we provide is a maritime superiority and an air superiority so that the amphibious phase can happen. Today we have some strikes launching against some land targets and ships that are out there that are playing the bad guy.
The ship itself is 333 metres long and boasts an armament of more than 60 aircraft, as well as its own self-defence system.
We have a F-18 Hornet, which is the striking arm of our aircraft carrier, 44 of those on board the ship. They're the ones that carry the bombs and the missiles, and they're the ones that are can provide that power projection. We have Growlers, E-18G Growlers on board, so that's an electronic attack aircraft. We have the E-2 Hawkeye. That is our command and control aircraft. It has a very powerful radar, several helicopters to provide that aspect of our mission.
Although the next generation of US Navy aircraft carriers are now rolling off the production line, Rear Admiral Thomas says the USS Ronald Reagan will remain relevant because of the constant evolution of its air wing. The Nimitz-class aircraft carrier is powered by 2 nuclear reactors and 4 steam turbines. Its top speed is classified, but it's at least 30 knots. It has a 63-bed hospital, a dentist, a chapel, 6 gyms, and even a Starbucks, albeit a little makeshift.
I've been on one of these things for a lot of years of my life, and I've got a lot of amenities on it, but you come out and it's a job. It's a long job. We get up early, we start the day, we go out and we fly 100 sorties a day. We do it safely day in and day out. I enjoy it. I get to see a lot of the world. I get to do something I think is pretty important. It's a great feeling every day waking up and being able to do this day in and day out.
Up in the flight deck control room, you'd be forgiven for thinking it's all fun and games. Leading Petty Officer Christopher Gibson is moving around tiny scaled models of each aircraft. They call it the Ouija board. There's small coloured thumbtacks pinned into each plane, denoting everything from takeoff order to weapons uploads. The system is old school. It'll go digital in about a year. But until then, we're allowed to see inside.
So this really is the nervous center for everything that happens outside. So they just called starts for the next event. So right now the air crews are manning up the jets. My guys are making sure that there's no hot exhaust blown on anything. Everything's clear path. So we're just manning up for the next launch.
Out on the flight deck, an F-18 Super Hornet prepares for takeoff. The catapult officers, or shooters, give various hand signals to the pilot before he gives a final salute. The jet engines roar and they take off in a spectacular display of military precision and a force that rattles through your bones. With Exercise Talisman Sabre due to wrap up tomorrow, the crew is winding back and preparing to move north. Where to? They can't say. That's classified information.
That's Megan Hendry with that report from the USS Ronald Reagan somewhere in the Coral Sea.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
Staying in Queensland, and we head to Townsville now. The coastal city is still struggling with the waste left over from February's floods. From the sodden turf at a local sporting venue or mould-affected shop goods, one Aitkenville school lost 13 of its string instruments due to the flooding. The instruments were exposed to too much moisture and it ruined their sound, making them unplayable. But those same instruments are being prepared for an encore performance. They will become part of the Australian Festival of Chamber Music's Baba the Elephant, pardon me, concert in August. Natalie Fernbach has the story.
This is the sad tale of 13 string instruments that perished in the February floods. After helping hundreds of students achieve their musical dreams, the instrument's life was over. Or was it? Gavin Findlay is the executive director of the Australian Festival of Chamber Music. He said this year's Baba the Elephant concert was the creative spark needed to give the instruments new life.
The story behind these instruments is amazing. So Anne Burke, who runs the art circle group here at the Hub, which is a disability art group, had a fantastic idea. This year we're presenting one of the story pieces we're presenting is Baba the Little Elephant, that many people would be really familiar with the story. And she had a moment of inspiration when she came across a group of damaged instruments from the flood from the Aitkenvale School. It's like, we can make these into elephants. And if you see from the instruments behind me, when they've been painted up and decorated, they look absolutely like the elephants from Baba.
The artists transforming the old instruments into elephants are from the art circle. The group's Anne Burke said the exercise was a terrific challenge for the artists.
While they were working, they did develop a lot of different skills, from painting, brushes, gluing, cutting, using scissors. A lot of sometimes have difficulty with different tools, but everybody, with assistance from their workers, they manage quite well. Yeah.
And these will be displayed in the foyer of the Civic Theatre. There's also a bit of a hidden link to the Civic Theatre in the actual sculptures, isn't there? Can you tell me about that?
Yes, I can. The actual drums the elephants are sitting in were the former lights from the Civic Theatre that I think somebody found in a skip. So they've been recycled.
So they're holding up your elephants?
Yes. They're holding up, so they're actually going back to where they come from.
No, I've got two elephants in the background.
Gavin Findlay said the festival is always looking for ways to appeal to a wide audience.
The Australian Festival of Chamber Music has been an important part of Townsville cultural life for 29 years. It's got bigger and bigger, and as it's gotten bigger and we have many interstate visitors come, it's become increasingly important for us to make that we're making activities that appeal to the broader community. So we have our annual Queen's Gardens concert that happens on the opening weekend on the Sunday the 28th. And the families concert has also become a very important part of our program, something for the young ones. And so that we've got, you know, we really want to make the space inviting. So these will be displayed in the foyer, as I said. I mean, otherwise these instruments would have just gone to the chip. And it's so fantastic that they'd be able to be reused in this way. And that, you know, we were involving schools as well.
That's Gavin Findlay, Executive Director of the Australian Festival of Chamber Music, ending that report from Natalie Fernbach. And the upcycled string instruments that were damaged in Townsville's February flood are ready for a new life. They can be viewed at the Townsville Civic Theatre ahead of the Baba concert on the 4th of August.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
It's a species that I have been fighting for.
Growing up in the bush is such a special thing.
So when the rain does
come, we've got a few numbers.
What
got
if
a...
you never come?
Put a feather in your cap.
ABC Radio.
And finally tonight, Maryborough's international basketball export, Matthew Dellavedova, says he can't wait to step on court with the Boomers next month. The Cleveland Cavalier guard has been in Bendigo touring with the FIBA trophy ahead of the upcoming Basketball World Cup in China. The 28-year-old's back in Australia to join the Boomers when they face Canada and the USA for a World Cup warm-up match, a number of matches next month. He says, growing up in country Victoria was great because it forced him to work hard to achieve his dream. And the NBA star had some advice for aspiring athletes.
Just try to keep working hard and make sure you get a little bit better each day, because if you do that, over a week it adds up, month, a year, over multiple years it really adds up. And I think, yeah, if you can stay consistent with that, you'll be able to improve a lot. And it's a simple thing to say, but it's hard to do every day.
Coming from a regional town, is it fair to say that, you know, these kids that have these aspirations have some real barriers in front of them to get to that elite level?
I think if you're good enough, you can make it from anywhere. And, you know, you have to work extremely hard, and I think there's advantages and disadvantages to it. So obviously it's a lot more hours in the car, especially for my mum and dad. They put in tons of hours. I know this road from Maryborough to Bendigo pretty well, having done it probably 3 or 4 times a week when I was younger, so I appreciate their support. But I think, you know, growing up in a smaller country town, I got the opportunity to play a lot of different sports growing up that is maybe something that the city kids didn't have. So I got the chance to play soccer, footy, tennis, one game of cricket. I scored a duck, so that was no good. Bit of hockey. So I think being able to play different sports, it's actually shown when you're younger, if you are able to do that, it's better for your physical development. Australians have always kind of punched above their weight on the world stage sporting-wise, and I think with the access of information and with the internet and YouTube and even NBA League Pass and things like that, the access to the information that kids get is a lot better these days. I had to go to the local video store when I was younger to get some tape of NBA things, whereas now they can just go online and watch it on YouTube. I don't think I was able to do that till about year 7 or 8, so... Yeah, I think you can make it from anywhere if you've got that dream and you're willing to work hard and get a little bit lucky along the way.
Getting back to Maryborough or Bendigo, is there anything in the pipeline there?
For coming back here to play or
doing whatever, mate, coaching, being involved?
Well, I'm only 28, so I want to play for till I'm 40, so got a lot of basketball left ahead of me.
How are you feeling about the upcoming tournament in China?
I can't wait. It's going to be good. We're in a tough pool, so we're going to have to be ready from day one. But I think with the group we have and with the international experience we have playing together, we'll do well.
Probably going to be one of the best teams Australia's ever put together. Do you pinch yourself sort of being part of that?
I know and understand how lucky I am to be a part of it. And it's a great group of guys that all care about pulling on the green and gold, and it's obviously a highlight for me, and I just can't wait to pull on the green and gold again. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yourself and Paddy Mills have always sort of been touted as some of the toughest players to play the game. Is that a country thing, do you reckon?
I think as Australians, you know, no one takes a backward step, and that's definitely the attitude we have as the Boomers. And, you know, I think being from the country and having to travel down to Melbourne on Friday nights, especially early on playing against the Metro boys, that was a great experience. But I think just in general as Australians, we're a pretty tough country, and you know, you always have your mates back. So it's a great group of guys and can't wait to get started.
That's Australian NBA star Matthew Dellavedova. He's been in Bendigo today touring with the FIBA trophy ahead of the upcoming Basketball World Cup in China. And it was a homecoming of sorts for the Maryborough-born basketballer, and he had some words of inspiration for aspiring sports stars from the country, and perhaps he's well worth listening to, because in 2016-17, he signed a four-year, $38 million deal with the Milwaukee Bucks, and he's been traded back to Cleveland for $9 million a year. So just extraordinary, isn't it? That's the program for tonight. I'm off to work on my jump shot. I'm Alex Hyman. Thanks for your company. I'll be back again tomorrow.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.